Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 3, Episode 7 of the Podcast for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. I am joined by, now it's becoming a thing.
Yes.
She's hanging out here.
Yes,
she's eating all our food. She's just not paying any rent. I don't understand what's the matter with her. But who am I joined by?
Kaylin Mitchell.
Yes,
we
Kaylin.
We should get nicknames, I feel like. Instead of it's yeah. So official now. I feel like I'm part of the
What will we call you? Can't be like Kmart. Ooh. That's terrible.
That's really bad. Out of business.
Kmart, out of business.
K-Dog.
K-Dog?
K-Linny.
Is that something? What's the nickname you got a lot?
K-Linny.
K-Linny? That's the best your schoolmates could come up with?
Oh, Mitchell. People call me Mitchell.
Mitchell?
Like my teachers and stuff. Okay. I'm not that cool. Like, I'm not a cool kid who gets a cool nickname. I get like... You. Hey, you.
Hey, you. Hey, you over there. You come here.
Yeah.
Why you went to New Jersey for school is pretty interesting. Hey, you over there.
I'll respond to anything.
All right. Well, for those listening and who have a Twitter account, hit us up at WaStateCFD. Give Kaylin Mitchell a new nickname. Hashtag Kaylin Mitchell's nickname.
Ooh.
That's good.
So I get to come on another one?
Of course. You are definitely welcome. You asked the hard-hitting questions.
Yes.
You did a great job talking to everybody. It was a pleasure having you around, Ms. Mitchell.
It was a pleasure, especially
yes.
this one.
And I think, yes, this one especially was a really great conversation.
Yeah.
We spoke actually with three people. It's tied for the most guests we've ever had on the show. We actually went to talk to the United Negro College Fund one time, and we had three folks then as well. And the energy in the room when a team comes and talks about what they do is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Specifically, this group of individuals, because one of them is native to the country we talked about today. Mm-hmm. Our topic is indigenous and impoverished people. And you may ask yourself, okay, well, we had a charity come on that helps folks in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. Why is that important? And how does it connect to the theme? Well, the villages they help are indigenous to that region. So, and they are, without question, based on the conversations we had with them, fairly impoverished.
Yes.
So it kind of went together. We were joined by Brian Dirks, the president of the board of directors, Jeff Hager, the executive director, and Marco Maldonado, the global director of an organization called Hands for Peacemaking, and they specifically go down to Guatemala and basically help in four different areas. They help get stoves. That sounds like the major thing they did.
Yeah.
Get drinkable water, help with education and economic development. One of those is hard.
Yeah.
Like four of them
four,
is
yeah.
like seems impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really cool to talk to them because they seemed like they had real passion for the
yes.
work. Yeah. And also talking with Marco about some of the issues that he sees mm-hmm. as a person who is from Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Really super cool. And so, yeah, it was really a fun time to talk to them about some of the things that they talk about. I have a question of the pod.
Yes.
As we usually do. Kaylin, what country mm-hmm. in the world
mm-hmm.
would you want to most visit before you die?
Oh, that's so hard because there's so many.
I know.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yes.
I want to pass the hot potato back to you.
Okay, you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. So I have always, my brother and I have always talked about, at some point we want to travel to Africa.
Okay.
And we've talked about where we would go in Africa,
mm-hmm.
right? And so for me, it would be someplace like Ethiopia. Okay. I would be really interested in. We had a priest at our church who was from the Democratic Republic of the Congo,
mm-hmm.
And it would be really. He talked about his experiences there and how tough it is for some folks. I would love to go and help in those areas. Mm-hmm. That would be one of the places in terms of like Europe-y sort of places. Yeah. You know, probably Ireland.
Okay.
So if I'm going to help people mm-hmm. in a country, it's going to be the Congo, it's going to be Ethiopia, someplace like that, Uganda. If I'm going to like have a fun trip yes. and go see mm-hmm. the sights, I think for me it'd be Ireland. What about
okay.
you? Now it's
okay,
back
so
on you.
Now I have, okay. So actually it's for kind of volunteer work and stuff like that. Any country that needs help,
yeah.
and I think that I like – they have a cause that I stand by, right. I would want to go and visit. But excellent. Now, like, Guatemala would probably be the top of my list.
I know. When we were talking to them, that, it was like, man, very cool.
And the work that they're doing is just so impactful.
Amazing.
Yeah, and so that's just very, like, it pulls,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But for something fun, probably, like, Zurich.
Oh,
I don't know
Switzerland.
Why. Yeah, I don't know why, but I think it'd be fun yeah. to go wrap up, you know, eat some foods, go visit some sites.
Yeah.
Switzerland just seems so like posh.
Yeah. So, and Kaylin is yeah. nothing if not posh.
So I think I'd go there.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Switzerland's a pretty good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that one. So anyway, without you don't want to hear us blathering on forever. So we're going to toss it to the interview with Brian, Jeff, and Marco from Hands for Peacemaking. Here it is. Okay, we want to welcome the most guests we've ever had in a single podcast. we're going to start to my left, Brian Dirks, the president of the board of directors, correct?
Yes, hello. Nice to be here.
Jeff Hager, the executive director. Yes. And Marco Maldonado, the global director of Hands for Peacemaking. Thank you guys for coming.
Sure, glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Marco, I believe you also get the award for longest travel to our podcast. You hail from?
I'm coming from Guatemala. Guatemala is the first country in Central America after Mexico.
Excellent. Amazing. Thank you for making the trip up just for our podcast. If you made the trip up just for our podcast, we have to talk.
Okay, let's talk.
So first, let's start off with Jeff. Since you're the executive director, can you tell us a little bit of the history about Hands for Peacemaking and what it is that your organization does for the community?
The history is we were loosely founded in 1984, 1985 by Dr. Leon Aller and his wife. They had traveled there for medical reasons to mm-hmm. take care of villagers, and it was during the Civil War. And when he was there, he noticed that there was a lot of other circumstances that were causing illnesses. And mm-hmm. so kind of born from his work was our work that started in officially in 1991. So, and now from that, we focus on basically four areas in the country. And so one is clean air stoves, two is water, and the security of water in the villages, education, building schools and furnishing those schools, and then economic development and sustainability. So those are our four main areas of focus in the country.
Wow, that's an awful lot to...
It's a lot of targets and yeah. a lot of people to serve, so...
And how long has that been going on now?
Officially since 1991.
Wow. So. And so you are based out of Everett, correct? But it sounds like gifts that go to you have a global impact.
Global impact.
That's excellent. Yes. That's awesome. Go ahead. I want to ask your first question, Kaylin. Let's go with Brian. Yeah. Brian, how did you get into this line of work?
I happened to attend a church in Northeast Tacoma that's been sending teams to Guatemala since 1989. And so members of our church have gone down there and been involved in school construction projects. And in the last 15, 20 years, we've been involved in the clean air stove project. So I started going on our church team. Then I became the team leader for our church. And then they somehow strong-armed me into becoming a member of the board of directors. And so it's kind of gone through there. But this will be my sixth time going down to Guatemala.
Oh, wow.
This year.
Wow.
So I've been down a number of times, and it's been a real adventure for me.
And
great thing for me. So
yeah. Now, you mentioned, this is an interesting one. So you mentioned you've taken multiple trips down there. Do you have a headquarters, I assume, down in Guatemala that has its own staff?
We have a large facility. We work in a very remote region of Guatemala that isn't very well served by the government there or by other nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of alone down there, but we have a big dormitory facility that sleeps about 16 people. And then we have a manufacturing facility where we actually build the stoves, and a staff of up to 10 people depending on the workload. So that's where Marco and our team work out of.
Amazing.
And have been for many years.
Amazing. So. Jeff, how did you get into this line of work?
Totally by accident. So it was actually, my background is in retail, so I spent 24 years in two major retailers, and became a Rotarian about 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And was asked, hey, do you want to go to Guatemala on a school build? And I got off the plane and fell in love with the country.
Yeah.
And that day that I left was kind of the first day of, I don't really want to be in the retail game anymore.
I want to be in
the nonprofit and serve globally as well as locally with being a Rotarian. And
right.
So that was kind of the path to get to where I am today.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's such a, there's such an under, we hear that a lot in a lot of our interviews, somebody who like, they find passion in the work and they go after it. Mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Marco, how did you personally get involved with this line of work?
Thank you. My passion for airplanes brought me to Hansford.
No kidding.
I love airplanes, and I really wanted to work around airplanes.
Yeah.
I worked for Mission Aviation Fellowship in Guatemala City for over 5 years, and I met people from different places, different NGOs, and Hansford Peacemaking was one of them.
Yeah.
So in taking care of clients like the missionaries going to Barillas, I became acquainted with Hansford Peacemaking and the work, wonderful work that they are doing in the highlands northwest of Guatemala.
Yeah.
And I became passionate about what people from other countries are doing in my country, with my people. And I'm serving here now. I have been with Hands for Peacemaking for 16 years.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Yeah. That's awesome. So I'm gonna, Marco, direct this question to you as a person who is native to Guatemala. Folks who hear the podcast may ask themselves, well, what is happening in Guatemala? Why is there such a need in Guatemala? Can you talk a little bit about the history of your country and why there is a need kind of to begin with?
Yes, there is a big need. We went through 36 years of civil war that started in 1960 and finished in 1996. And that war, the civil war, took the lives of about 300,000 people in Guatemala.
Unreal.
And there is a lot of people during that period of time that didn't go to school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of people. When I came 16 years ago to Guatemala, I did a census in the villages. And one of the questions was, do you know how to read and write?
Mm-hmm.
And some answers from the people were, no, we are animals. We don't know how to read and write. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
I had to explain to them that they just didn't have the opportunity. And a lot of those people, they didn't have the opportunity because the war was going on. And the parents were afraid to send children to school. And that's when there is a lot of lack of education, there is also a higher possibility of poverty. Plus, our government has kind of lost interest in taking care of the villagers. The farther the villages from Guatemala City, the less help they receive. Right. And that's where we are working with Hands for Peacemaking.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that's a central theme in a lot of getting out of poverty. It seems to be education, right?
Education is one of the keys for getting ahead in life.
And yeah.
We are so blessed to have some education.
Yeah, right. So what are some of the biggest challenges currently that you think people face in the villages in Guatemala? You kind of talked a little bit about how the further you go away from the power structures within the country, how that becomes a tougher and tougher life. What do you see as some of the bigger challenges that people are facing currently in your country?
Yeah, right now is the lack of job opportunities. Coffee and cardamom is some of the crops that people work 3 months out of a year to get their money for the rest of the year.
Right.
But with the coffee prices that we have and all the sicknesses that the coffee plants.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. Yeah.
People are not getting enough money, and that's one big part of the poverty and what people are suffering. And the other one is the lack of basic needs, the basic like water. Mm-hmm. People don't have decent latrines. They make a hole in the ground, and that's what they use.
Yeah.
A lot of the villagers don't have electricity. They don't have water. They don't have access good roads to their village. They have to walk. That's not for all of them, but a lot of the villages don't. They're still struggling for having basic needs accomplished.
Yeah. Jeff, when you landed on the ground for the first time in Guatemala, what did you notice immediately in terms of like the needs that you saw that you were like, this has to get addressed or we cannot move forward, basically?
There's kind of two sides of the coin for me. There's the sheer sight of poverty. And you can take that two different ways. You can see poverty all around you and see those, as Marco alluded to, the lack of basic needs, water, clean air, things like that, education. But the other side of the coin is that the one thing that I took away was the amount of community that there was in these villages and how they all bonded together for the common good of the community. And you don't see a lot of that in the States because everybody's on their own mission. And I don't know if it's driven by poverty or by culture or a combination of those things. But it's very evident that they're all working to get to a better place. And that's one of the things that I think helps us in country is that when a village does approach us about a project or a program, they are all in it together and all want to go the same direction. So.
How about you, Brian? What was it that really, when you arrived, made you think, I want to keep doing this work because I want to see it improve?
Well, there's so much need down there. It's really hard to narrow it. But the first village I was at in 2012 was a village called Xoxloc, a remote Mayan village. And when we go down there, Hands for Peacemaking sets us up in a school, and they provide all the cooking and sanitation facilities, including, in this case, cold showers. And so we took our showers, and like the day two or three, we saw people hauling water up and putting by the jugs and putting them in these big cisterns and getting our shower water. So after that, I realized, then I walked down to where they were getting the water, and it was 3/4 of a mile journey down to the river. So they were hauling water for us up on the up on their backs, women and children, just so they could get a water to us. And after that, I told the team we need to take shorter showers. But that's just one example of the hardships in these villages just to get clean water, or maybe it's not so clean. Just to get their basic needs, and they have to grind corn every morning for their tortillas. And so they live in huts that have dirt floors, and they build fires to cook on and open fires, and just seeing how their living conditions, as opposed to our living conditions, where the poorest of the poor here are living, in most cases, a lot better than the average villager in these areas. Right. So it's kind of a culture shock in a way, but it's also inspiring because we realize that there's so much to be done down there, and we just can't do enough. There's a lot of a huge amount of need down there. So
Let's fast forward. So Marco, what do you think are some of the best improvements you've seen in working with Hands for Peacemaking, but in general in your country? Do you see things getting better, and where do you see things getting better?
Yeah, for example, according to the Global Alliance for Clean Cook Stoves, 5,000 people die every year just in Guatemala for cooking on open fire.
Unbelievable. And we are I had heard something like that, yeah.
Yeah, we're building stoves. Those are wood-saving cooking stoves, and we are helping the villagers with the stoves. Not as many as we wish, because we don't have that much money.
Right.
But those families now cooking on a stove, they are free smoke in their kitchens, and that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the relatives die, and the family doesn't even know why. And we can kind of see the reasons, because a lot of respiratory problems and lung cancer, but the villagers don't have the money to go to the hospital. They don't get even the name of the sickness of their relatives.
And
if they go to the hospital, they get a prescription, but they don't have the money to buy the medicine. So they go back to the village just knowing what happened, but not with a solution. Mm-hmm. So that those families are living better. We also build schools. We believe that education is a big part of success in the villages. And there are a couple of Rotary clubs in the Snohomish County area.
Wow.
They come every year.
Do they really?
To build schools.
Cool.
And that's also great. So those lives of the children, they have a higher opportunity to go to school and more motivated to go to a nicer school.
That's
than
right.
What they really have.
Yeah.
Also, the job opportunities that we are creating through building the stoves. We hire people, we teach them how to build the stoves, and we are solving problems in the villages with those products.
That's amazing. Like, it really literally got to change that family tree almost. You have to, like, to get to a point where the kids or the grandkids can be educated, can find work, and then all of a sudden those opportunities start to open up.
Yeah. So, for example, one of the things is we are not thinking for the villagers and saying, okay, this is what you should use. Yeah, here's this stove, use it.
Yeah.
Rather, we wait for them to have a written request. They come to us, and that means to us that they have had a meeting.
Yes.
They agree that they need a change, that smoke is bad for their families, and that they want a stove.
That's excellent.
So Jeff's work here in the United States, and also Brian, is to find teams that want to go down and pay for their stoves. It's not a free meal. We still charge villagers what they can pay.
Yes.
And they have 5 months to pay $26,
which
is a small amount for us, but it's a lot for them.
Yeah.
And like we always say, we want the villagers to have skin in the game so they can take care of their stove, they can use their stove, and they can really appreciate their stove. And they are very appreciative of what they get.
So it's $26 to
$26 is what we charge the villagers, but the stoves, including the follow-up, it's $200 per stove. Okay.
But still, that's, wow.
Yeah. Brian, you were going to say something. Were you going to hop in there?
Yes, I was, but now I
okay.
Slept my
no
mind.
Problem,
I'll,
sir.
I'll jump in. I did remember. I did want to say, Marco mentioned education. The average education level in the local villages is up to the sixth grade. Beyond the sixth grade, they have to go to quite a distance to go to another school. And then if they want to go to high school, they have to go to the regional municipality. So it's quite an effort to get an education.
Yeah.
But most kids are lucky if they even make it to the sixth grade to get an education.
Yeah.
That's the kind of education that we're talking about in those villages.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about how your organization was received when you first come into a village and you're talking to the folks who live there. Do they view you with a sense of skepticism? Like, what are you doing here? Does it take a little bit of time for you to explain we're here to try and do this? How are you received when you first begin interacting with folks who live in those villages?
Yeah, something interesting is that, first of all, they come to us And that's a huge sign for us that they are ready for the change.
Okay.
Let's talk about schools. Let's talk about water. Let's talk about latrines. Let's talk about stores.
Like village leadership or folks?
Yeah, the village leaders come to us with a written request.
Okay.
With the name of the villagers. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
Because that starts the relationship with the villagers.
Right.
So when we get a team from the United States usually, but we also work with some Rotary clubs from Canada. And we come to the village, they are already waiting for us.
Wow.
And eager to have a project in their village.
Yeah.
And the we build a relationship with the village leaders, especially with the women and also with the children, and they are ready to receive us.
Wow. That's awesome.
When we arrive on the ground, they usually typically have a huge welcoming ceremony for us. So there's hundreds of villagers. They're lighting off fireworks.
And,
and they come up and they give us hugs and cheers. And then we all introduce ourselves in front of them. And it's almost overwhelming
That's
when we
amazing.
Arrive. And then the same thing when we leave, they have another big ceremony to thank us.
Yeah.
And it's just really part of what makes it so worthwhile to go down there is the reception that we have
That's
by the villagers.
So cool. Yeah. That's so cool. I want that type of reception. You have not done a good enough job.
Yeah.
I need fireworks.
Okay, well, let's say someone listens to the podcast and wants to start giving to your guys' organization. How would they do that? Can you tell us what donations do for your organization?
Oh, you're going to give me that?
Right. Oh, now, yeah. Marco's like, now it's Jeff's turn.
Obviously, with any organization, there's operational costs. And so the investment that we get, and I'm trying to turn that from a donor to an investor.
Yeah.
Because truly, you are investing in the lives of villages in Guatemala. So, so the investment you make, it invests in our reach in Guatemala, being able to go out to more villages and accept requests and have those discussions with them. And it also helps on the state side that we can reach more groups, more civic groups, more churches, more communities that are located in the states that are Guatemalan.
Yeah.
To be able to form teams, because we've got... Marco alluded to it, we've got a backlog of villages waiting on requests.
Wow.
And so that helps us defray that cost. If I, you know, have to go to Houston to talk to four or five Rotary clubs, then that helps go, you know, drive the interest and get the teams there. So, so it's the investment, we're investing in the end result in Guatemala, and we're investing in getting more teams excited about going from the state. So.
In addition to what Jeff said, our compound that we have there, the manufacturing facility and Mission House, basically the dormitory, it takes a two-day drive from the airport to get there.
Wow.
It's an overnight thing. So we're in a very remote region of Guatemala, but one of the things that Marco is trying to do right now is set up a different manufacturing facility closer to the central transportation corridor so that we can work on supplying more villagers throughout Western Guatemala with more stoves, because the need across Guatemala is universal. We happen to have a very highly rated stove that we can't send economically from a manufacturing facility. So by having this, because of the transportation costs, so by having this other facility and by contributing to Hands from Peacemaking, you will help us with that capital need that we're
that's
trying to
excellent.
Accomplish down there.
I love the idea of it being an investment, because that's really what it is. You're investing in the future of Guatemala and folks who are in villages who, without your help, would probably never be able to have access to these type of things. So investment is a really great way to put it.
And it's very interesting because the villagers are so appreciative of what they get, because they get almost zero help and support from the government. So when the teams come to their village and they work hand by hand with the villagers, it's huge.
Yeah.
Because not even the government is going to their own people.
Right.
But these foreigners coming from so far away, paying their own way, they are staying in the village, sleeping in the school, eating in the village, and working with the village leaders to go from house to house, installing the stoves or building the schools or whatever project we're doing. So they are very, very appreciative. And that's what keeps people interested in coming back year after
year. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing. Do you guys have any programs or events that you would like to talk about before we leave? Is there anything that's coming up for you that you would want people to know about? Jeff?
We have an event, of course it's this Saturday, so a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
So we have an event up in Marysville for our investors and our supporters. So it's a dinner, and Marco will be speaking, and I think they gave me 4 minutes, and so because I tend to ramble on. And on, so, but it's kind of a kickoff celebration for the year and for the teams going down, and obviously a fundraiser for us. So it's kind of building that community within community of the supporters that we have up there.
Yeah,
so.
And we're always happy as board members and Jeff and Marco when he's in town to meet with different groups, civic organizations, churches, Rotaries, Kiwanis, whatever to. To help to tell our story and to spread our message and encourage. Right now, we're actually recruiting for more teams to go down. We have a need for more teams. So
Was what I was going to ask. If there are people who might listen to this podcast who might be actually interested in contributing and going down and being a part of the solution, do they go to your website to access that?
Yeah, okay, our website, front page, form a team, click on it, and it sends me an email and.
Excellent.
Make the contact and away we go.
Awesome. So what we'll do is we'll provide that link inside the podcast for people to be a part of. Brian, Jeff, Marco, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Talking about this really, really amazing work you're doing down in Guatemala. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias.
Okay, and that was our incredible interview with Brian, Jeff, and Marco. Wow, that was just really neat.
It was.
They were really just, I mean, just cool. Like, it's really cool to see people who just decided that the need was great enough for them that they had to go do something about it. And, you know, Jeff talked about how he worked retail, and then finally he was just like, I've had enough. I can't deal with it anymore. Mm-hmm. And to see people, like, just decide to basically grab life and go do it.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It was.
Right. And talking to Mark about his experience, I mean, those are things that I had never even known about with Guatemala. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
The things that we take for granted.
Yes.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. Can't believe it. One thing we're going to do is we're going to hit you with some facts and figures about Guatemala. For those who maybe don't know, this is the first time maybe they've kind of heard that it's a country in need, great need in Guatemala for very specific reasons. So one of the things I want to talk about first is the global view on extreme poverty. So it exists. It's all over the world. There are billions of people who still are in extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. But there's some good news. Since 1990, over 1 billion people have moved out of extreme poverty. Wow. So actually, for those people who think, the global system is a nightmare and things are horrible all the time, we've actually had 1 billion people since 1990 get out of extreme poverty. That's really hopeful news. I think if we're going to always highlight the bad, we need to highlight some of the good as well. Guatemala is a little bit different. Its picture is a little tougher. A civil war lasted for 36 years in Guatemala from 1960 to 1996 when they became a presidential representative democratic government through the development of a constitution in 1985. They developed the constitution in 1985. They still fought over it for 11 more years, which is unbelievable. Yeah. Imagine that happening in this country for that long. That would where would people be?
Yeah, it puts them in distress.
Yes. I mean, the resources go away, focus is on fighting, and then before you know it, you have lots of ostracized people, people who are at the edges or near the edges, they are now over the edge, those sort of things. So it's obvious why something like that would happen.
Yeah.
They've had a series of different presidents from different parties. The current president is a gentleman named Jimmy Morales. He is an actor and screenwriter turned politician. He is now the president of Guatemala. This is interesting. Half the population are of Mayan descent. They are Mayans. Hmm. Yeah. They're like Mayan Indians. Half of Guatemala is a descendant from the Mayans, the great empire. That's unbelievable, right?
That's unbelievable.
That's pretty cool. Marco hit on this a little bit. 60% of the country does not know how to read or write. And that's where it starts, mm-hmm. right? The ability to read or write, that's what's going to, it's going to get you knowledge. It's going to get you out of your circumstances, right? 2.4 million families need a stove in Guatemala.
Oh, it's
what is that?
It's crazy. It's something that we take for granted here. And
for real. You get it in your apartment.
Yes, exactly. Come, mine came with one. Right? And yours probably came with one.
Yeah.
It's
unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. And then the other crazy one that he had, the amazing statistic, was the fact that 5,000 people die a year in Guatemala just for cooking
because
on an open flame.
Yeah, because of that.
And then he talked about how, like, they don't know what it is because they can't go to the doctor.
And then they can't get their prescriptions filled because they can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Another interesting stat I just want to pull out for that Marco kind of hit on, because I think this highlights, you know, the level of poverty that exists. So they charge the families $25 for their stove, okay? They say that they can pay that off over 5 months, $25. Mm-hmm. Imagine what you paid this week for $25.
Yeah. On your coffee.
Right?
Or
yeah. These people cannot pay the $25 back on the stoves right away. It takes them 5 months. Mm-hmm. We drop $25 wherever we go, yeah. Right?
Well, because he said something about how they work for 3 months out of the year mm-hmm. to basically make all that they are going to have for that year.
Yeah, with the coffee industry and such. It was really very, very interesting. Very interesting, really cool picture of Guatemala, the need that's there, but really hopeful, sort of like they're really making a difference down there. Really changing family structures. Charity. There are all sorts of charities like this in the Combined Fund Drive, international charities that are helping folks all over the world. So make sure you go to the website, take a look, search through international relief and development. In terms of upcoming events for the Combined Fund Drive, we just had our Thurston County Recognition event. This Friday, we will be having our recognition event in Bellingham. It's a lunch up at Northwater. Kaylin will be there.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Signing autographs.
Oh, yeah. With my new nickname.
I don't know what that is yet.
No, we don't know.
We don't know what it is. Well, no, we know it's not Kmart, and I don't accept K-Dog. Those are too off. I'm not into that. Okay. I don't like K-Dog.
Okay.
And we'll have to pick something.
Okay.
I'm not. By the next time you're on a podcast, we will have a nickname for you.
Okay. Perfect.
But yes, so Kaylin will be there. And then on March 15th, we have the Spokane Recognition Event at the Steam Plant Grill. And finally, on March 20th, we will have the King County Recognition Event at the Mountaineers Club in Seattle. So that is it for me. It is it for the three-week run of Ms. Kaylin Mitchell. And Ms. Heather Lucas will step in next week and be the co-host yet again. Kaylin, I really want to thank you.
Oh no! Thank you.
You did an awesome job. You were like Barbara Walters from 2020.
Oh, perfect!
You killed it. You were so great. We really appreciate you coming on the show, and you are definitely welcome again.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I'm gonna hold you to it.
All right, that sounds good. And thank you to everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next week.